Good evening. Midnight Mass at 10 p.m. COVID's to blame. As the Pope says, honor the outcast. A Brexit deal is announced with 6 days to go. Trump sows chaos in Congress, and a cop shoots a man with a cell phone in Ohio. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Thursday, December 24th, 2020.
25 dicembre, luna decima. Trascorsi molti secoli dalla creazione del mondo, quando in principio Dio creò il cielo e la terra e plasmò l'uomo a sua immagine.
Pope Francis celebrated a low-key Christmas Eve Mass made somber by the coronavirus pandemic on Thursday and said people should feel obliged to help the needy because Jesus himself was born a poor outcast.
He cannot help but love us. That's the way he is. He's so different from ourselves. God always loves us with a greater love than we have for ourselves. This is his secret for entering our hearts. God knows that we become better only by accepting his unfailing love. It's an unchanging love that changes us. Only the love of Jesus can transform our life, heal our deepest hurts. He sets us free from the vicious circles of disappointment, anger, and constant complaining. To us a son is given. In the lowly manger of a darkened stable, the Son of God is truly present. But this raises yet another question. Why was he born at night, without decent accommodation in poverty and rejection, when he deserved to be born as the greatest of kings in the finest of palaces? Why did it happen like this? To make us understand the immensity of his love for our human condition, even to touching the depths of our poverty, of our misery, with his concrete love. The Son of God was born an outcast in order to tell us that every outcast is a child of God. He came into the world as each child comes into the world, weak and vulnerable, so that we can learn to accept our weaknesses with tender love, and to discover something important. As he did in Bethlehem, so too with us, God loves to work wonders through our poverty. He placed the entirety of our salvation in a manger of a stable. He is not afraid of our poverty. So let us allow his mercy to transform it completely. It's true. In our endless desire for possessions, we run after many numbers of mangers filled with passing things and forget the manger of Bethlehem, that manger poor in everything, yet rich in love, teaches that true nourishment in life comes from letting ourselves be loved by God and loving others in turn.
The Mass was held with fewer than 100 participants and only a small number of cardinals and bishops. It's usually attended by up to 10,000 people, including the diplomatic corps, representing nearly 200 countries. Everyone except the Pope and his small choir wore a mask during the Mass. The service began 2 hours earlier than usual, so people who attended could return home by 10 p.m. curfew. On Friday, the Pope will read his Urbi et Orbi to the city and world message from a hall inside the Vatican instead of from the central balcony of St. Peter's Square, an event that usually attracts tens of thousands of people. Italians are under a nationwide lockdown for much of the Christmas and New Year holidays. People are allowed to travel only for work, health, or emergency reasons. And Britain clinched a narrow Brexit trade deal with the European Union today, just 7 days before it exits one of the world's biggest trading blocs. It's the most significant global shift for the UK since the loss of its empire. The deal preserves Britain's access to the EU's single market of 450 million consumers, but won't prevent economic pain and disruption for the United Kingdom or its EU member states. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson made the announcement.
I'm very pleased to tell you this afternoon that we have completed the biggest trade deal yet, worth £660 billion a year, a comprehensive Canada-style free trade deal between the UK and the EU, a deal that will protect jobs across this country, a deal that will allow goods, UK goods and components to be sold without tariffs and without quotas in the EU market, a deal which will, if anything, allow our companies and our exporters to do even more business with our European friend, which achieves something that the people of this country instinctively knew was doable, but which they were told was impossible. We've taken back control of our laws and our destiny. We've taken back control of every jot and tittle of our regulation in a way that is complete and unfettered. From January the 1st, we are outside the customs union and outside the single market. British laws will be made solely by the British Parliament, interpreted by UK judges sitting in UK courts, and the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice will come to an end. And for the first time since 1973, we will be an independent coastal state with full control of our waters, with the UK's share of fish in our waters rising substantially from roughly half today to closer to two-thirds in 5.5 years' time, after which there is no theoretical limit beyond those placed by science or conservation on the quantity of our own fish that we can fish in our waters. And I want to stress that although, of course, the arguments with our European friends and partners were sometimes fierce, this is, I believe, a good deal for the whole of Europe and for our friends and partners as well. Because it will not be a bad thing, in my view, for the EU to have a prosperous and dynamic and contented UK on your doorstep. And it will be a good thing. It will drive jobs and prosperity across the whole continent. And I don't think it'd be a bad thing if we in the UK do things differently or take a different approach to legislation. Because in so many ways, our basic goals are the same.
And that's British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. The deal is partial and a lot of details are to be worked out. The UK formally left the EU on January 31st, but is in a transition period as trade, travel and business remains unchanged until the end of this year. Reportedly, the deal will also support the peace in Northern Ireland, a priority for President-elect Joe Biden, who warned Johnson he must uphold the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. In Washington, President Trump's sudden demand for $2,000 checks for most Americans was swiftly rejected by House Republicans on Thursday as his haphazard actions throw a massive COVID relief and government funding bill into chaos. Earlier this week, he blasted the $900 billion law as full of pork barrel projects that he says must be eliminated. He stopped short of threatening a veto, but hinted he might just sink the hard-fought compromise.
Is a disgrace. For example, among the more than 5,000 pages in this bill, which nobody in Congress has read because of its length and complexity, it's called the COVID relief bill, but it has almost nothing to do with COVID. This bill contains $85.5 million for assistance to Cambodia, $134 million to Burma, $1.3 billion for Egypt, and the Egyptian military, which will go out and buy almost exclusively Russian military equipment. $25 million for democracy and gender programs in Pakistan. $505 million to Belize, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Panama. $40 million for the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., which is not even open for business, $1 billion for the Smithsonian, and an additional $154 million for the National Gallery of Art. Likewise, these facilities are essentially not open. $7 million for reef fish management, $25 million to combat Asian carp, $2.5 million to count the number of amberjack fish in the Gulf of Mexico, a provision to promote the breeding of fish in federal hatcheries, $3 million in poultry production technology, $2 million to research the impact of downed trees, $566 million for construction projects at the FBI. The bill also allows stimulus checks for the family members of illegal aliens, allowing them to get up to $1,800 each. This is far more than the Americans are given.
That's President Trump. Earlier today, House Democrats attempted to add Trump's request for an increase in stimulus checks to the bill that was passed by both houses yesterday. It was a rare Christmas Eve session, taking all of 15 minutes to conclude. The attempt to change the bill was batted down under House rules that require the GOP to sign on unanimously to any changes, an unlikely prospect. The majority of Republicans are against the stimulus boost.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Maryland seek recognition?
Madam Speaker, on behalf of the Speaker of the House of Representatives and myself, and consistent with the request of the President of the United States, I ask unanimous consent that the Committee on Ways and Means and the Budget be discharged from further consideration of the bill H.R. 9047 and ask for its immediate consideration in the House.
Under guidelines consistently issued by successive speakers, as recorded in Section 956 of the House Rules and Manual, the chair is constrained not to entertain the request unless it has been cleared by the bipartisan floor and committee leaderships.
Parliamentary inquiry.
The gentleman will state his inquiry.
Can the Speaker inform us as to what that committee consists of?
Floor leadership in this context has been construed to apply only to the minority leader and not to the entire hierarchy of minority leadership, where the chair has been assured that the minority leader has no objection.
I thank the chair for the clarification.
If Trump does veto the legislation, it would put at risk a continuing resolution to keep the government open. House Democratic Leader Steny Hoyer says talks are ongoing. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, are discussing options in case of a veto.
We will have a new president in less than 30 days, of course, and that president will give leadership. This president, again, told Republican leaders that he was going to sign this bill, and then he gave his five-minute press conference. We can do what we can do, and so we on Monday, I will be talking to the Speaker and to the members of the Democratic Caucus to determine exactly how we want to move forward. We're not going to let the government shut down, nor are we going to let the American people down from our perspective. Let us hope that we join together. As I mentioned, so many of these bills were overwhelmingly bipartisan. Just days ago, both the House and the Senate overwhelmingly passed a bill that we sent to the President of the United States, who has demurred so far. He has not said he's going to veto the bill. I hope he doesn't veto the bill. I hope he signs this bill. And then, as President-elect Biden has said, we will have more work to do, which is what all of my colleagues have said.
House Democratic Leader Steny Hoyer. Meanwhile, Michigan Democrat Debbie Dingell spoke of terrified Americans on Christmas Eve in her own rendition of Silent Night.
It is not a silent night. All is not calm. For too many, nothing is bright. And for too many, they are not sleeping peacefully. I did a town hall last night that had people crying, people terrified of what is going to happen.
Michigan Democrat Debbie Dingell. Vermont's Republican Governor Philip Scott got into the act as well. He says Trump should keep his word and sign the bill.
I don't know what he's going to do. He has a few choices, one being just to veto it. But when you negotiate a piece of legislation, it means everyone's giving up something. And so to take pieces out of it could unravel everything, and that would be unfortunate. But I hope Congress will again stick to their votes and see this through so that we can get relief to those in desperate need.
Vermont Governor Philip Scott. Washington is now hurtling toward a crisis as the president enjoys the holiday at his Mar-a-Lago club. Trump's unpredictable demands are creating more headaches for Georgia GOP Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, who are fighting for their political lives in a pair of January 5th Georgia runoff elections, forced to choose whether to back or buck Trump, potentially angering voters on all sides. Democratic Senate candidate John Ossoff, like many progressives, including New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, supports $2,000 checks. Ossoff had this to say.
The U.S. Senate should pass $2,000 checks for the people. David Perdue should stop obstructing the direct relief that the people need. David Perdue opposed even the first round of $1,200 checks. He blocked an additional round of checks for 8 months and then insisted on cutting the second round to $600 when so many people are hurting. The United States Congress should step up and pass $2,000 checks for the American people who are in this holiday season having difficulty putting food on the table, affording prescriptions, affording the car payment, affording the house payment.
Are you concerned that this isn't going to get passed quickly enough for these people that you've met today who are so urgently in need of help?
Deeply concerned. The Senate must move immediately. There is clearly bipartisan support for $2,000 checks. Senator David Perdue should cease his obstruction, endorse President Trump's proposal for $2,000 checks. Let's get the money moving to the people who need it.
Did you see anything here today among the people that you helped that would maybe inform your potential colleagues next year about what they need to do for them?
The truth of the matter is that most of the folks in the U.S. Senate have no idea what real people are going through. David Perdue lives behind three gates on a private island. He hadn't come out in public and answer questions from the people in 6 years. He has no concept how badly the people are suffering through no fault of their own during this pandemic. Millions of families cannot feed themselves. Bills piling up. Credit cards maxed out. This crisis caused by this virus is tearing this country up, forcing people into intense financial distress. Congress needs to step up for the people.
And that's Georgia Democratic Senate candidate John Ossoff speaking today in support of President Trump. Demonstrators gathered in a cold Christmas Eve drizzle Thursday to call for justice in the death of Andre Hill, a black man who was shot and killed by a Columbus, Ohio police officer this week. Video showed Hill emerging from a garage and holding up a cell phone in his left hand seconds before he was fatally shot by an officer identified as Adam Coy. Hill was unarmed. The audio is disturbing.
Put your f***ing hands out to the side. Hands out to the side now. Roll to your stomach now. Yeah. Hey, don't get f***ing close. I can't see a f***ing hand. Get your hand up from underneath you now. You got a medic coming. Don't move, dude.
And that was the video, an audio part of a video that was taken by a police cam of an officer confronting a African-American man who was killed in the confrontation. About 6 seconds pass between the time Hill is visible in the video and when the officer fires his weapon. There's no audio at the time. The officer hadn't activated his body camera. An automatic look-back feature captured the shooting without audio. Groups also protested Sunday and Wednesday over the killing of 23-year-old Casey Goodson Jr. by a sheriff's deputy. He was shot December 4th as he entered his grandmother's house in Columbus. Both shootings are under investigation. And in more disturbing news, this time related to the election, the Republican chair of a county canvassing board in Michigan, Monica Palmer, who initially refused to certify local election results favoring Vice President Joe Biden over President Donald Trump, said Thursday she doesn't know a woman charged with sending her threatening text messages. Caitlin Jones, 23, was charged with making a threat of violence by a U.S. attorney in Detroit.
here announcing the filing of federal felony charges against Caitlin Jones for allegedly sending what most Americans would describe as horrifying and menacing text messages to Monica Palmer, the chair of the Wayne County Board of Canvassers. Jones called Board Chair Palmer a racist and a terrorist. She used graphic and profane language. Jones then sent Palmer two graphic photographs of a bloody, naked, mutilated, dead woman lying on the ground. Immediately following, Jones sent Palmer a photograph of Palmer's minor daughter. Jones then told Board Chair Palmer, quote, "I'd just like you to imagine that's your beautiful daughter. The allegations in this case should make us all disgusted. There is simply no place in Michigan or in the United States for chilling threats like this to people who are simply doing what they believe is correct."
Jones appeared in federal court in Concord, New Hampshire, and was told to report to court in Detroit on January 13th. She must participate in a mental health program. And President Donald Trump notoriously told members of the far-right Proud Boys to stand back and stand by before the 2020 presidential election. Since Trump lost, the Proud Boys have no longer been standing by. Over the weekend in Washington, there were multiple instances of violence, and the Proud Boys were accused of burning Black Lives Matter banners at black churches. According to a new report by The Sun, the group is planning false flag operations to impersonate supporters of President-elect Joe Biden while causing chaos at his inauguration on January 20th. Members of the Proud Boys are reportedly plotting to disguise themselves as Joe Biden fans to wreak havoc during the presidential election, The Sun reported. The Trojan horse-style plot was revealed on InfoWars' alum Joe Biggs' YouTube channel, on which the right-wing militants were ordered to kick off this presidency with effing fireworks. Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio explained the plot during a November 20th episode of Biggs' YouTube Revolt Mother Effers. Tarrio instructed, "Do whatever you got to do to effing get your tickets. You show up there in Biden's gear and you turn his inauguration into a effing circus, a sign of resistance, a sign of revolution," he urged. The video has been taken down by YouTube for violating the YouTube site's rules of programming. And just to say a ticket or punching your ticket or getting your ticket is a reward, sort of, that members of the Proud Boys get if they strike or hit or in any way injure an opposing Antifa or any other person they don't like. Basically, they're a drinking group. They associate themselves as a drinking group and go around beating up on opponents. Closer to home, Governor Andrew M. Cuomo today granted clemency to 21 individuals who have demonstrated substantial evidence of remorse, rehabilitation, and a commitment to the community. Clemency went mostly to people who had received long sentences on drug possession charges. And finally, a new owner who purchased the Village Voice says he will start publishing the dormant paper again next month. After 63 years, the iconic Alt Weekly shuttered back in 2018. Brian Kaye, the CEO of Street Media, which owns LA Weekly, acquired the newspaper from Peter D. Barbie. The terms of the sale were not released. Kaye plans to restart the Voice's website in January and to publish a comeback print edition early next year, followed by quarterly print editions. He's hired Bob Baker, a former Voice editor, as a senior editor and content coordinator. Kaye has a poor reputation for bringing back struggling publications, though. He tried the same thing with the LA Weekly and ended up gutting the paper's newsroom. This time, he says, he will honor the traditions of the Village Voice of yesteryear. And that's some of the news for Thursday, December 24th, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening and have an awesome Christmas Eve.